All right, we are recording. I just, off the bat, I want to say that for me, the further that I dig into your story, the question that just stays in my head blaringly is, but why? Why? You know, did this happen to you? So that's kind of in the background for me. But I want to start with you just sort of telling me what happened, or, you know, what happened to you?
Okay, so, you know, I wrote the book like a narrative nonfiction because I wanted people to get into the story, and I didn't want to be a political yeller. You know, I didn't want to be a pundit's book of just screaming and yelling. And I wanted to transcend the political divide, and I wanted, because I think this is a story that's not really party-driven. And so I had to go learn how to do that. And so when I learned how to do that from talking to, like, Lisa Crone at UCLA and people that and at the San Francisco Writers Conference and all these people I learned from in this sort of new craft, which is, I kind of approach it like a science because I've been in science since I got out of college, so I kind of approach it like a science thing. You know, what are the facts? How do you do it? How's the brain work? Mm-hmm. What I want to do? And because ultimately I wanted people to understand at the time how fluky this was, how it continually just unfolded into one shock after another, so that I too was going, why?
Yeah.
and that combined with, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And just feeling the need to educate people, because I also had just a sort of, I learned so much about myself during this time, because more consciously, because I'm 53, and, you know, I was raised in Detroit by two people that were police officers when they met. My dad was a police officer, you know, my entire childhood and my whole life was around those people. And I think, I can only hypothesize, I think that's what gave me a huge sense of moral outrage when something was wrong. And I thought this was a government system that was really, really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really bugged by it. But also, I did want to be seen as an idealist or conspiracy theorist or something like that. So it's really, you know, it's difficult to know. It's a bit sort of a delicate balance. And I thought, well, I just have to tell the facts and show people and not tell them. Actually, I shouldn't say that word tell, but show them and then let people make up their own mind. And luckily, so much of this story, which is the big unusual part, is completely provable through, because this is done with the government. So I have all these written letters that are open to the public. I've got testimony where people can't deny that they said that because it's under oath.
Yeah.
And so it was just dying to be told. And so that's sort of, you know, that's really what, well, one of the reasons why I did it. But so really, when you finish the book, it's like I start, the story became so much bigger than me, because I kept discovering things and realizing that I really wasn't the first instance. The beginning of the book is just when I became involved, but something much bigger had been going on since about 6 years before. And that was, you know, the government was wondering why so many national security secrets were being leaked out by seemingly good people. Most people are good. I don't believe most people are bad.
Right, right.
You know, most people at the NSA are good. Most people all over the place, I think, are good. And we don't do stupid things, whether good or not, of just letting, you know, national security secrets just leak out of our workstation. So what the heck's going on? And Congress assigned the Federal Trade Commission to really find out and stop peer-to-peer software from leaking out information. And hindsight being 2020, I think the Federal Trade Commission did a horrendously bad job of it. And in the meantime, since I also learned that so many of these government agencies don't communicate with each other,
mm-hmm.
Homeland Security was wondering what was going on and paid Dartmouth $24 million to find out and to work on a study. And then Dartmouth started using the technology of this company called Tyversa in Pennsylvania that knows how to, they say they, you know, they can monitor all these files real time like no one else can. And they just talk about how they're three times stronger than Google, and there's just all this macho power. power talk going on about how large and in charge they are in monitoring and finding all these files. So,
Mike, can I just back up? Just for a little bit here.
Sure.
You were just a successful businessman going about your daily business, running your company, LabMD, down in Atlanta, Georgia, and then. And life was okay, right? I mean, you had nothing.
No, it was good. And, I mean, it was great.
And then, what happened?
And so that's where it all, and then I come in right at that point where we're oblivious to all that I just said, and mm-hmm. the phone rings, and it's the head of Tyversa saying, "Hi, we've got your file, and we found it on a peer-to-peer network, and it's got 9,000, he sent it to us, and we discovered it had 9,000 patients in it, and he said, you know, would you like to hire us to remediate?" And immediately, it's 2008, I mean, and we are, I work in medicine, we pounded in our head how important patient data security is.
Yeah.
We think we're really good at this. So we're like, what?
Yeah.
And, so immediately we're calling IT people and the lawyers, and the advice of those people are like, this is not okay, because he wouldn't tell us anything unless we hired him, and that's what was bothering everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, since right off the bat, and I mean right off the bat, I just had a sense that this was not okay. So I did not talk to him. I had everything his communications in writing, which are in the book. And I certainly didn't know I'd be writing a book then, but I needed documentation, because I had long learned that the written word means way more than verbal, because that just is a whole Pandora's box of,
yeah.
I don't remember, I didn't say that, yada, yada. And by having everything in writing, it's just, that's the end of the quote-unquote misunderstandings or the memory failures.
Sure, yeah.
So what he... So we're having a great day, and then suddenly we're in a panic, and we start, we want to go, what the heck is this? And we look all over, and we when we got the file, it was a billing file. We knew exactly that it had been the billing department, and it was an overall accounts receivable file, which means it had to be the manager's computer, and boom, it was. I mean, it was like, we know where this is, we went there, there it was. She had software on her workstation to listen to music. Now, we to this day, we don't know that's how it got out, because Snowden walked out with a thumb drive, but she shouldn't have had it there. It was against company policy.
Yeah.
She was mortified. Even if she had it there, she was listening to music. She was not leaking files.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we're like, what are you doing? And we got rid of it. And I said we jumped on that workstation like a fumbled football. So we immediately killed that that software program, which, hindsight being 2020, it's the right thing to do, I guess, but I would have loved to have had that on there still for analysis, but we were just like panic stricken and it's like the doors open, slam it shut was what we were doing.
Yes, yes, yes.
So once we made sure everything was clean inside, then we went outside and we were looking out in the world for the file. And in the meantime, he's emailing us saying, are you still interested? And did you see this going on in security? Did you see that Justice Breyer had his stuff taken? And did you see this article in the Post? And my IT people, I had them working from home looking for the file and seeing no evidence, and telling us that they saw people searching for it, which is very creepy,
mm-hmm.
because we were the ones that were searching for it. So at that point, we're like, this is just like a movie. This is weird.
Mm-hmm.
This is just,
yeah.
And again, 2008. And so we just told him to go away, because we couldn't find it on anywhere. And he just wouldn't go away. And then I said, just call our lawyer and don't call us. And then later in 2008, his lawyer called our lawyer and said, we're going to give this to the Federal Trade Commission, and was very accusatory about, we were bad in our security. And we're like, who are you to even know? So what's
right.
going on down here?
So they were going to give it to the Federal Trade Commission because they were accusing you of being.
They said it was the real reason we later found out was because the Federal Trade Commission was talking to them. But at the time, they said, "Well, this is patient information, and we feel like we should, we should give it to the government." I was like, let me tell you something. Something stunk from the first minute.
Wow.
And I'm thinking something stunk, but your lawyers are just going to look at the law, because that's
right,
their job.
Right, right.
So it wasn't like my lawyers going to come to my rescue, but we were not in the mood for a fight. It's like, look, go away. We feel like everything's secured. We can't find it out there. There's no one that's been damaged. Go away. just go, fine, check that off, and down the road you'll skip, which was a big mistake. But they, you know, so we dumped, you know, thousands of pages on them. They sent us 11 pages, single-spaced, of questions. And we complied, and then once, that's when I started coming out of the zone and my head got out of the clouds, because they weren't transparent. We started not trusting them right away. It was like a chess game. They wouldn't tell us anything. They'd say we didn't answer their questions. We're like, how could we not have answered your questions? You have pretty much everything. You know, I don't know how, you know, we're thinking they're just lazy. And, or they haven't found what they need yet and they want to keep digging. So then we went to Washington, D.C., and when I met them face to face, my intuition went crazy. And I was like, this is bad. This is not. This is like a movie. I feel like I'm in an episode of, you know, CSI, and I am going to have to dig into this myself. And I started to research more, and it's funny, hindsight's 20/20. You wonder why you didn't look, why you didn't find something right away. But I found congressional testimony. I found the head of Tyversa in front of oversight with General Wesley Clark. I found General Wesley Clark on their advisory board with Howard Schmidt, Obama's head of cybersecurity. I found the FTC at the same hearing, and they're all talking about cybersecurity and P2P networks, and my and the Dartmouth guy is talking, and my file is in the congressional record, which is, I can't tell you how surreal that will take.
I know. Again, my question, but why? Why? And part of me, Mike, asked that question because I have to, I mean, admit that I just feel much more vulnerable than I ever did. I mean, and I was feeling, I always felt like this kind of thing, it happens to people. It's one thing to feel, to know that it happens. It's another to know someone that it happened to. And then it's another to know someone that it happened to that actually stood up and fought back, do you know? And so just the more I'm talking to you, the more vulnerable I feel. And I think part of my butt.
I think it's weird. I mean, life is a strange thing. I really feel this way. I mean, I think in a way they picked the wrong guy because I'm not. I did write on Facebook over the New Year's. It's like, you know, it's important to have an interesting life more than a quote unquote successful life. And I've had a very successful and a very interesting life.
Yeah.
You know, because I was born in Detroit and I grew up in Detroit before it got rioted out, and I and my parents were cops there, and then I went to a great school, and then I worked in surgery, and then I started this company, and now here I am with this thing, all because really I couldn't get an answer that we did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to have my reputation assassinated by just quote unquote settle because it's a smart thing to do just to
yes.
make them go away.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I know companies that do that, or it'll ruin your company, and it has gutted us, but the choice we had was a terrible choice. It wasn't just like sign on the dot and let's have a little hand slap and off we go, and we'll all, it's a smarter move, you cut your losses and go. It was, you know, I was going to have to allow the world to think that we had shaky data security practices, and from a government agency that has no standards, that wants to be able to use a rearview mirror and decide later what's right and wrong.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm in a very aggressive business. You know, we do cancer detection. We work for surgeons. We practice medicine here. I have doctors that work for me. This is no joke around here. If you think things are funny, you get to work someplace else.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And my competitors are more than happy to send a little doubt my way. And the press releases the Federal Trade Commission puts out about who they quote unquote get to settle are just so laden, and I call it, you know, public relations justice.
Yeah.
Where they bury in the bottom, you know, no one admits any wrongdoing, and who's gonna believe that? Everyone's gonna think, well, if they had done something wrong, they wouldn't be in that trouble and they wouldn't have signed something. You know, because because the reputations of businesses that do that aren't good. Now, I was having none of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a lot more to lose. I wasn't Sony with billions of dollars that could withstand a, you know, $5 million loss and skip on down the road. I mean, it just, it's a different situation.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
Well, you know what? I'm curious about how you feel about your patriotism. I mean, at this point in your life, would you consider yourself a patriot?
Yes. more patriotic. It's so funny. I mean, as a matter of fact, I separated so much my country versus my government, and I've learned so much. And I say in the book that these people, I mean, like, I want to warn my fellow citizens. I want to, like, look, they exploit our patriotism. Mm-hmm. Don't let them. And it's not the country that's bad or the people that's bad. It's the government. I've always felt this way because my degree is in economics. I've always thought that small is better, whether it be small business or small government, because of the functionality of gargantuan organizations. Because what happens, I mean, you become nameless in a large corporation many times. You become nameless in the government. You become, and that's, it's not that they have bad intentions. They all have great intentions. Mm-hmm. They're wrong. They have bad results, but the intentions are good. But that's what happens, and that's why I'm not a hypocrite to that, because that's, I intentionally built a small company to diagnose cancer, and I could have gone public, and I didn't want to. I just wanted to have a good living, which I have a very good living, and have meaningful work, and not have all that sexy shenanigans trip, which is what's so ironic about where I'm sitting here. Here I am, fighting the feds on the radio. You know, life is interesting.
What was that like when I'm getting the impression that you weren't actively looking for a fight. You just sort of found yourself in the position of having to choose rather abruptly whether to fight or not.
I knew I was never going to sign a consent decree. Mm-hmm. I knew I never would. But I also knew going to fight right away is not smart. I mean, you didn't know. I mean, the whole situation seems so bizarre to so many lawyers and people in industry and government that the constant advice I got, which is smart advice, was to wait it out and see what they really do. Let them sniff around, be very nice, comply completely, which we did, and then see if they'll go away, because we're such small potatoes. Look what's going on. We at the time were a 40 employee cancer detection center, a small private business. I mean, really, what is the point? And so everyone thought, well, they're just going to go away. And so don't provoke them when they could ultimately just go away, because they have to pick their battles too. They don't have unlimited resources. I mean, come on, So that would seem like a logical thing. So although I always told my lawyers, which you'll read in the book very clearly, I'm never signing a thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll go along with this until we find out, but make no mistake, if they come at me saying you've got to do this, the answer is going to be no. So that was very clear early, but the FTC didn't know it till they were very clear that they were not going away. And the second they said they were not going away, then I was like, game on.
Yeah, yeah. And all this is happening to you pre-Snowden, too, so that must have been lonely.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it was bizarre that it was suddenly, all of a sudden, you're legitimized, I guess, if I could use that word, as a result of Edward Snowden and what happened.
But it was validating.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really weird. I was like, how weird. I was so bad. I'm like, oh, I'm so happy about that, but not really.
Yeah.
But that's in one of the chapters of the book, I put, guess I'm not crazy after all, because, I mean, I'm a pretty stubborn person, and I'm not really concerned with conformity. So, I it was okay with me to be the only one out going against the tide, but, I just was, it was just so amazing when, before that happened. When I started writing the book, it was before Snowden, and I was like, okay, this book has to be a novel, but it has to be, footnoted like a thesis, because this is just too unbelievable. So, people are just going to go, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have to show them everything, which is actually a lot of fun. What the irony is, that happened, and now I don't think people pay too much attention to my bibliography because they believe everything I say anyway, which was not the case before Snowden and the NSA. So it's interesting. All that work.
Yeah, right.
All that academic work. Please pay attention
to it. So before Snowden, you probably then had one idea of what you wanted the book to accomplish. Has that changed now that there's been that sort of a...
Actually, selfishly, as far as that goes, it would have been a large... there's so many good books out, right? And the ones that get attention have to fit in, and I'm just lucky that it's a national topic now, and I can be there, I think, educating people because I've lived it, and I just want to be as transparent as possible. That's not going to make me popular with them, boy. They sure don't like transparency when the razor's cutting the other way. trust me.
Yeah, no. No doubt.
They're not real happy with me, but that's fine. That's great. In a funny way, I need the public now for my survival and our own education anyway. So I embrace it. Yeah, I have no choice. This is the difference between I'm fine, but what happened is not fine. And what happened to my employees and my physicians is not fine.
Yeah.
But I'm a survivor, and I'll be fine, because it's ironic. I mean, how can I not love my country more? I get to bitch and moan and write a book about it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, that's a great thing.
That, yeah.
You know, I get to talk to all these people. I've met all these people on the Hill, in business. I'm on the radio with you. This is an adventure, and I've considered my life pretty much an adventure, and I'm not... I can morph to lots of things, so I'll be okay. But I still think this is not good for people that can't be okay. Small business people can't do this. You know, we have to appreciate small business people. We have to appreciate the fact that, you know, that our government is way behind the cyber criminals, and the government needs to be on our side getting ahead of them. What was a peer-to-peer network built to, you know, the U.S. Patent and Trade Office, which I talked about at the end of the book, actually showed how the software was meant to fool people, and it's not necessarily that LabMD did anything wrong ever. Well, today that can be your power strip, or that can be your Wi-Fi thing, or that can be your camera. I mean, there's so, you know, we find out the NSA and RSA were together on things. It's just, you know, it's yeah, it's a little creepy.
Yeah.
but we just have to be careful.
It is, yeah, I would say so. Mike, can you tell me, 100 years from now, what do you want to be remembered for?
Having the courage to just keep my eye on the prize and not buckle to their puffery and intimidation.
That's great. Thank you very much, Mike.